Hello again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. I am Michael Citro, the managing editor of themainland.com, the SB Nation site covering Orlando City SC and the Orlando Pride and Orlando City B in the USL. We're bringing you this episode, number 47, and we're going to talk a little bit about the New York Red Bulls game that just happened this past weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about first victory ever for OCB and the first victory ever for the Orlando Pride. So we got a lot to get to. We're also going to look ahead to Saturday's opponent, New England Revolution, on the road. That'll be the second time in 3 weeks the teams have played. And joining me to do all of this, because I can't do it alone, is mainland writers Daniel McGann and Andrew Harrison. Guys, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing really good. Doing really good. Looking forward to the weekend. So.
Yeah, we came off. We did pretty well last weekend, other than the main team. So,
yeah. I got to tell you, I've been dealing with some a little bit of a back injury this week and some insomnia, and so I'm very sluggish and kind of pained and slow. And so basically, I right now am Orlando City's offense.
You're the whole team.
the whole team. Have you been able to hold things with your right hand and then move them to your left hand without dropping them or giving them away to somebody else? Because I feel like that's kind of what we're doing in the midfield right now.
Yeah, that was an ugly game on Sunday. There's no way to sugarcoat it. Orlando City went up, got on the front foot immediately, scored a goal early in the game, as they have been doing really a lot this season for some reason. But again, from that point on, could not string two passes together, could rarely string one pass together in many cases.
Dribble.
The defense was not organized, and they had all kinds of trouble with New York Red Bulls' high pressure. Nobody bothered to slow Sasha Kljestan down all night, and it was still a tremendous effort by Joe Bendik. Had the team ahead 1-0 at the half. We get into the second half and we have our weekly, Orlando City referee talking point. And 2 minutes after that, New York gets on the board, and then they just kind of went on a little mini tear, scored 3 goals in 10 minutes. And Orlando City pulls one back on an own goal by a player who should have been sent off. And it finishes 3-2. And I tell you, I was nervous going in to Red Bull Arena. I said it last week. Going up there to play a team that has been, that was very desperate, and a team that's got, way more talent than what their results had been showing. And I was a little worried that things might fall apart up there, and they kind of did. Andrew, I'm going to start with you, just your overall thoughts of the match and what happened.
It was just a disaster. I mean, I think that we have no unity right now. There is no connectivity between any position. This constant change between where does Nocerino fit in if he's healthy, where does Kaká fit in? He's not going to not play, but all of these changes are just hurting us. And I think we don't have the depth and we don't have the cohesion that requires to play MLS soccer right now. We are just dropping the ball all over the field. Nobody wants to pass. And when they do pass, it seems to be in somebody in a different colored jersey. There's no beautifulness to this game right now. And until we find that, we're going to continue to struggle. And I think it's going to involve changing some people. But what we saw really the other day was we made some substitutions and nothing happened. It was almost got a little bit worse for a little in terms of the casual fan watching it. It got even worse because there was just no excitement from any of our players. And when we circle back around and you ask me my man of the match, it's going to be a real tough one.
Daniel, one of the things we found out at the Pride game on Saturday was that Kaká suffered a minor groin injury, wasn't going to make the New York trip, and that forced a little bit of shuffle in the lineup for Adrian Heath. And, obviously this team, no team is as good without their best player. But, I mean, how much worse is this team without Kaká than with him?
A lot. I mean, unfortunately, that's the answer right now. And I thought perhaps Baptista was going to look a little bit better. I thought perhaps moving to a 4-4-2 with those big two forwards up top was gonna help the team out a little bit, but it didn't, because you alluded to it coming into this. Actually, I think you didn't even allude to it. You blatantly said it. We could not put two passes together. We gave the ball away so often in the midfield and really everywhere around the pitch. We weren't pressuring when we need to pressure. It just seemed like we scored a goal and then we went into a shell, and not only went into a shell, but forgot how to pass. Forgot how to get, find open space whenever you don't have the ball. And that's something I've noticed about Orlando over the past few matches, is that when the players aren't necessarily on the ball, there's only a few of them moving to get into open space. And everyone else is kind of just sitting in their role and expecting someone to make a play with the ball rather than helping them make that play by finding some open space. And Inventor was doing exactly that, finding open space at the beginning of the year. But if you watch some of the guys in the midfield, they just look, I don't want to say necessarily lazy whenever we get the ball, but maybe just disconnected. It's the conversation of, is this team disconnected without Kaká? And with Kaká, I think we look differently, but without Kaká, it just looks very disconnected in that midfield.
Well, and you know, you got to go back to the first two games. So when he didn't play, we looked like a completely different team.
We did.
You know, he came in, and it's like we all of a sudden we lost. You know, Heath was maybe just saying, you got to pass the ball to Kaká. You got to pass him to Kaká, and all of a sudden Kaká's not on the field, and they're like, well, now I've got nobody else to pass it to. That's just really scary that this team kind of just collapsed in on itself. And I think even the partnership of Hagida and Seren that had been so strong, they both look so defeated in that Red Bulls game. And I think we could have been on the much worse of a shellacking after the 26 shots.
Yeah, and that's partly what I was, you know, what I was saying earlier about the high pressure getting to Orlando City, was that I think that both the defenders and the defensive midfielders, I don't know if there was just too big a gap between them and the attacking midfielders, or if those guys weren't working to get open. But as soon as guys got the ball, there was someone in their face. They needed that outlet. And if that outlet wasn't immediately there, it was just booting the ball down the field, playing kickball, or it was, giving the ball away cheaply. And then next thing you know, New York's coming forward in numbers, and you've got, you know, Rafael Ramos or Breck Shea on their back foot trying to just backpedal and hang on for dear life, and not, there wasn't a whole lot they could do. I think Shea didn't do a very good job of crowding the ball on the right side and allowed too many passes into the area. And I think that, you know, there's no reason for Mike Grella and Sasha Kljestan to have as much space and time on the ball as they had. It was, they're good players, but I mean, you have to go and challenge them and make them give up the ball. And I don't think anybody really did that on the defensive end. And up front, you know, I mean, very few touches for Vinter. Molino had less than 70% completion, you know, passing accuracy. Batista, you know, started off okay, but then kind of faded pretty quickly. And I don't think, if that was a 4-4-2, it certainly morphed into something completely different, because Batista was playing well under Larin, and Larin didn't get many chances, but of course he did bury the one earlier in the game. So it's good to see Kid Fantastic, another goal in New York. Let's go talk about the talking point, because at this point in the game, Orlando City's got a 1-0 lead, a long ball over the top by Bendik, hint of offside for Larin that obviously wasn't spotted, and nobody even talked about it until the next day. Carl Wimet, with a flying scissor tackle, catches Larin from behind, and it's a play on and no foul given. I mean, it was certainly not in the box. It was certainly above the box, but even if nothing comes of it and you don't score on the play, New York is now down a goal and a man. So pretty big talking point, I would say, Andrew.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think it's basic refereeing. We'd seen it earlier in the weekend with the Columbus-Houston game where Tyler Derrick got sent off about, you know, denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Somehow they managed to misinterpret the exact same rule twice in the same weekend. just going back to basics, there's no way that defender, regardless of everything else that came out that's been discussed this week, that he should not have been off. It was a dangerous, reckless tackle, even if the play shouldn't have taken place. That makes it even worse, because we could have seen a season-ending, if not potentially career-ending, knee injury from that foul. I think this goes back to the referees needing to get back to basics. They need to learn the rule book and just understand that when they see something with their lines, it's not subject to interpretation. It just needs to be ruled upon.
Mm-hmm. And for my part, you know, you're sitting there on the road with a one goal lead, and much more time and space with the ball because you're up a man. Daniel, you know, certainly it's got to be easier to defend the Red Bulls with 10 men than with 11.
Well, you know what the argument's going to be is that Kyle Larin was offsides. So, I mean, the bad thing here is that it all leads back to the same conversation, is that Pro has been doing a disastrous job of making the correct decisions. If Kyle Larin's not offsides and he's onsides and that tackle is made and he's the last defender, it's a red card. I don't care if it's in the box or out of the box or if there's a PK or no PK. The call has to be made. If a man ever brings down another man from behind and he's the last defender, it's a red card. That's what happens. And the fact that neither referee, either one of them said anything, and after Orlando going through what has seemed to be just game after game after game, which I understand bad things, bad calls, bad moments happen, but whenever it seems like it's happening, not just once, one time a match or every game, it's every other game, it's happening every game on a multiple occasions in every game, something has to be done. But, I mean, what can we do to fix that?
Yeah, I don't I don't subscribe to the whole thing about the offside, because offside is given when it shouldn't be, and it's not given when it should be every game, every single game. It's just part of the game. And that one was a very tough one to see because Bendik has the ball way back at the top of his own box. Yeah. The referee's assistant was, you know, not expecting a quick, you know, outlet like that, and he wasn't really, to be honest, in a great position to make that call. So if he misses it, you know, so be it. That's part of the game. You could say, well, it's sour grapes to whine about it when he should have been offside. But my point is this. If a guy elbows someone in the head and the ref doesn't see it, but the guy who gets elbowed retaliates and punches the guy and gets sent off, you know, should he not be sent off for punching the guy because the original one wasn't called?
I mean, I think that's where you go to the arbitrariness of all of this, of Pro trying to dig themselves out of the hole. You know, if Larin gets injured on that tackle, he's still injured.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
You can't say that it should never have happened. Well, it did happen. You still have to rule upon the facts. And I think you bring up an interesting point, is 100 times out of 100, the assistant referee doesn't call that offside because he's never going to see it. His standard positioning for the assistant referee in that position is spot on. You're just not going to be thinking that it's a possibility. I think you just can't say that it should never have happened, and you can't then turn a blind eye to it the way that they did with Disco this week too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was going to get to that. Disco, very disappointing. MLS Disciplinary Committee did not suspend Wimet for a game. This reminds me of going back to last year when Kyle Larin got sent off against the same Red Bulls. Sasha Kljestan clearly wasn't even touched, grabbed his leg, screamed, writhed around in pain, and Disco that week came out with nothing for the simulation on Sasha Kljestan. And you got to think, Daniel, if you're me, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I look at it and go, New York favoritism.
I look at it and go, MLS conspiracy to get replay put in the game. So maybe I'm looking at it more global effect of what MLS, but I mean, all the major North American sports have, or most major North American sports have some form of replay. And I think MLS is wanting to get there and wanting to drive that home. Now, are they conspiring with Pro? I think Pro wouldn't really care because their respect in the league is pretty much in the bucket now. I don't know. I don't want to say conspiracy this, conspiracy that, but replay's got to be in the league. It has to exist. It's not that difficult whenever these decisions happen and these moments in the game happen. There's always an argument with the referee, whatever the call is. Anyways, take those 15 or 20 seconds to have a man in the booth who's seeing the play and is able to look at the replay and make the correct decision, because these are game-altering, match-altering decisions that affect points, affect playoffs, and in the end, affect revenue for teams, because whether or not they make the playoffs or not,
They sell more memorabilia. They get more fans. They sell more tickets. And it's better for the league to have something clean as well, because you don't want to detract people to come into the game because they're seeing these things happen and the league not doing anything about it.
Yeah, for me, it's better to have a good product on the field than a bad product. And what we're seeing is providing a big old flaw to the product on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the refereeing's just not been good enough, and I get that every team has things happen over the course of a season, but when one team has something happen every week, it's a little bit aggravating as a fan to sit here and go, "Welp, here it is again. We got pro'd again. Pro gonna pro." one team will get a couple a year, and we're getting it every week. And if you go back to the first week of the season, you've got now a waved off goal against RSL. You've got a pull down in the box late against Chicago. You got the Philadelphia thing. You know, obviously the New England late handball on Carrasco for the ball hitting him in the crest, and now you've got the scissor tackle from behind by Wimet. I mean, it's just, that's a ton of dropped points. And at the end of the season, you look back and go, "Oh, missed the playoffs by 5 points. Those would have come in handy." So it affects the players, you know, in their playoff bonuses and everything. I mean, it's just, it's not acceptable, and it needs to be cleaned up. But let's move on. And Andrew, I'll start with you. You're man of the match for Orlando City against the Red Bulls.
I mean, it's tough. I want to give it to Tommy Redding. I know he made some mistakes, but realistically, it was just it was eventual math that we were going to get scored on a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But because of his performance and the fact that he probably did keep it under double digits, I will go with Joe Bendick. He didn't get a lot of plaudits in the start of the season, but he has really grown. And mm-hmm. I think the times that Redding and Hines both did get beaten, he was still there until the floodgates opened. And then I think all three of those people just kind of collapsed into a hole. Not through any of their fault, just purely pure exhaustion at this point. But mm-hmm. I'm going with Bendick.
All right, Daniel?
Yeah, I agree with Andrew. I mean, there's not a lot of light in this game. There's not a lot of positives to bring from it. I mean, I guess we did put two in the back of the net, but I'm going to go with Bendick as well. And I was necessarily a detractor of his at the beginning of the season. I'm still going to hold on to that right now pretty tightly. But he's been playing well as of late. He's grown in confidence. He's not standing on his line the entire time. He doesn't seem to be as hesitant. And in this game, he showed well. But whenever you get under that type of onslaught, the balls are going to end up hitting the back of the net unless your name's Tim Howard and they're playing Belgium.
Yeah, 3 for 3 for Bendick for me. His stop on Grella on the volley was unbelievable. It's up for save of the week, but I don't even think that was as good a save as his save on Felipe, who with the diving back against the grain of where he was going at the time and not to give up a rebound was phenomenal. Just an unbelievable save. Stopped it right on the goal line. It didn't allow a rebound. That was phenomenal goalkeeping by Bendick, and it's unfortunate. He deserved a better fate than what his teammates gave him on Sunday in New York, or in New Jersey. Can't even give him credit for New York. guys, real quick, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but Orlando City B got their first win, and, Andrew, we'll start with you. Tyler Turner with two goals, a brace to lead the Young Lions reserves. Did you see a brace in Tyler Turner's season coming?
Well, you know, I think Andrew may have been putting himself on mute there, but I don't think anybody saw a brace coming from Tyler Turner. I mean, the fact that they were able to get points, that's awesome. Let's talk about Tyler Turner. What's this player going to do? I mean, I remember at the beginning of last year, a lot of people said, "Hey, this is a guy that could make it to the senior club at some point." And, you know, he's not necessarily made a name for himself down at the B level yet, but he's scored some goals, scoring a couple goals, maybe growing in confidence. Do we see this player, someone that could potentially help the senior team at some point?
Well, Andrew, you can weigh in on that since you were muted before.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely growing into that kind of player. But, you know, go back to what we were saying last week. OCB were bad. We didn't see two goals coming from the entire team.
That's
never
true.
Mind two goals coming from one player who plays in a defensive position. And who isn't really that tall either as a defender. So, you know, not his traditional Seb Hines header. You just didn't see it. And I hats off to the kid, and if he can come in and score those kinds of goals for the senior team in a couple of years, then that's what OCB is all about. And we should probably be happy that we're starting to see some little bit of a benefit rather than the dourness that happened the second game this weekend for them.
Yeah, they played again on Monday, and they lost on the road at Harrisburg with the City Islanders winning 2-1. They get an own goal off Kyle Callan McFadden's head on a play that probably Ridgers easily handles if it's not touched by the defender. And the only goal is not from the run of play for Orlando City B. Rochez on a penalty puts Orlando City B on the board. And I'll stay with you, Andrew, so unmute yourself now while I'm talking. should we be concerned with the firepower this team has at Orlando City B that the strikers are and midfielders are not scoring goals?
Without a doubt. I mean, just going back to the Red Bulls game, we only had two legitimate strikers in the 18, which were Laren and Baptista, who started the game. We're then going down to OCB, where we've seemed to put all of our strikers, and we're still not scoring. And we still have that DP salary going on with Rochez, as well as two super draft picks, and we're still not seeing the goals. We have to be concerned about this franchise strike force, not just OCB strike force right now. And it's really worrying, because I don't see where how we're going to solve it with the cap space that we're in, with the DP position we're in. We have to do some major trades, but we're going to have to get people to pick up dead weight for a lot of money to kind of clear some space.
And Daniel, a very eventful weekend for Haji Berry. He plays at Pittsburgh for OCB, gets called up, emergency recall, goes to New York, actually plays against the Red Bulls. What do you make of this young kid? He seems to have a ton of speed, but, you know, you look up at the end of the game and he's played 17 minutes and he's touched the ball four times.
Positional awareness. I think Haji Berry is that in touch. He's got to work on those two things. And it leads to what we kind of saw with all the players against the Red Bulls. They didn't really have good positional awareness. Like I said, they weren't finding that space. Haji Berry, with that speed, and we saw it earlier in the season, getting over the top, he has no problem with that. He has no problem when he sees where the defensive line is and getting in behind. His problem is finding those spots, which Kyle Larin has grown immensely in this year compared to last year, making those diagonal runs to find the open space to be able to be an outlet for pressure and then holding up play. Berry doesn't necessarily have either the touch or the positional awareness to be able to do that yet, but with his athleticism, and I know most football fans hate hearing the word athleticism, but with his athleticism, he has the ability to grow. And it's kind of awkward for me to see Haji Berry getting the call up, and maybe not some other players who are having a much larger hit on the cap. But Berry does bring something late in the game, that type of speed not a lot of players have that can really put pressure on the back line. I'd just like to see him use it in a more focused manner and finding those spaces.
In an ideal world, Haji Berry and Richie Larea both are starting and getting 90 minutes every game for OCB.
Yeah.
That's what we should be getting from them. Let's turn our attention to the big, pleasant awesomeness that we had on Saturday. Orlando Pride playing their first home game ever at the Citrus Bowl, which is now called Camping World Stadium, by the way. So fill the tent, I guess, is the new would be the new hashtag. But we're out of there after the season. Anyway, the Pride, it could not have been, we'll start with Andrew, it could not have been a more successful opening game at home in any facet, you know, the crowd, the result, the excitement of the play, than it ended up being. I mean, and Alex Morgan putting the cherry on top with her first goal for the Pride, Andrew.
It was such a fantastic environment, atmosphere. All the players were completely jazzed for it. You could see it when they were warming up. You could see it when they were walking out. I want to say they left their hearts on their field. They kind of knew that they were playing not just for the Pride, but they were kind of playing for women's soccer too. Like, the league is still early on. It's still trying to get new followers. It saw a great marketplace and a great arena to highlight itself as a future sport in this country. It was such a great atmosphere. I really can't big it up enough. My wife thought it was probably one of the best games she's been to in a long time, because it had that almost USL environment about people going for the love of the game, not necessarily to have their hearts bleed or throw stuff on the field when stuff doesn't work out for them. People were there because they wanted to see it, even if they weren't necessarily understanding what they were even looking at.
No kidding. Just under 24,000, between 23 and 24. I think it was 23,400 and some, if I recall correctly. A new NWSL record for attendance. Portland's capacity is less than that, so it can't be beaten right now. That record will stand until somebody has the capacity to beat it. So it was good to see. Andrew used the word jazzed up. And that's a perfect segue to talk about Jasmine Spencer, because for my money, she really put on a show on Saturday. Daniel, what did you see from her, and what did you see from the rest of the Pride?
Jasmine Spencer, wow. I mean, both against Portland and against Houston, she is a game changer. That pace, her energy that she brings, and she runs the entire time. It's nonstop, like dead sprints. That is dangerous. And not only that, but she cuts inside, and she's the ability for her to keep the ball while running through traffic, even though she has that low center of gravity at 5'1", it's really nice to see. She's going to be dangerous, and I'm sure she's opening up eyes, not just in Orlando with Tom Sermani and others, but around the league as well, and that can only bode well for the future. But overall, Orlando played really well. The ladies really took it to Houston, and it was a little unfortunate on Houston's side with Carly Lloyd going out early. But you talk to this team's depth whenever Leanne Sanderson can come off the bench, and you just see the quality and how good she is on the ball and how calm she is on the ball, especially with that free kick that put in the second goal. This team really, I think, has the depth to go a long way, and I know we had an ask earlier for some questions that maybe some readers will look at, but I expect this team to be in the conversation for the playoffs and maybe even pushing past the semis into the finals this year, just because of that depth. And it looks like they're starting to gel a little bit, but there were some scary moments. And it's always good to have Ashlyn Harris back there in goal, as she showed, making some good saves with Houston being able to get on the ball and put some chances on net. So from the back moving forward, this team really looks built to win.
Mm-hmm. Now, Andrew, we talked about Carly Lloyd going out early in the game. Did that kind of ruin the match for you a little bit, or was it okay?
I think it did ruin it a little bit. It had been so hyped that you're going to see Alex Morgan versus Carly Lloyd. But ultimately, I think that the talent on the field, you know, was so great that the women, I can't say how I feel like the Pride just really wanted to bring it as a team. Like, they were not going to lose this game. Carly Lloyd could have played the full 90 minutes, and they still weren't going to lose this game. It left a little bit something I would have loved to have seen her, you know, play more than 4 minutes of actual football and see what she could have actually done. I mean, she is the World Player of the Year right now. But right. I don't want to take anything away from it. I thought everybody played their part, from the groundskeeper to the owner. It was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. A 3-1 win. The first half ended scoreless. It was a bit of a pedestrian first half, played mostly between the two boxes. It came out after halftime. Leanne Sanderson was inserted into the match and immediately made an impact in the, you know, the composure she had on the ball, the ability to pick out players, the ability to hold on to the ball in traffic. She did a lot of good things, brought a lot of good things to the table. And, you know, we hope to see her playing full 90 minutes here pretty soon. She definitely impacted the game. The first goal was an own goal by Andressa for Houston, but it was basically forced by Spencer and Morgan pushing the ball forward into the box. The second goal was Sanderson made just a tremendous play by, you know, getting a free kick in a good area and deciding, I'm going to go ahead and take this quick. So let me ask the ref. She said, can I take this? The ref said yes. So she had permission. She turned around, ran at the ball, put it in the back of the net. And just a smart player, smart play by a smart player, and Tom Sermani could not have talked more glowingly about her after the match. And then, of course, the highlight goal at the last of the three was Spencer coming down the left side, cutting in toward the box, sending in Steph Catley, who played another good game for Orlando, and Catley found Morgan for the one touch, the one time shot into the net. So. It was 3-0 at that point. They did pull one back. Andressa with a really just amazing goal from distance that Harris had no chance on. And that was the only way you were beating Ashlyn Harris, because she made some really, really great saves, and she's up for a save of the week on, I think it was Janine Becky who came in one-on-one, and she just got a hand on it and sent it just wide from, I mean, there was acres of space, and it was just a great save and a very key save 19 minutes into the match. Daniel, let's start with you, your player of the game for the Orlando Pride.
Wow, a lot of women, excuse me, to talk to here. I would have to say, man, I'm going to give it to Harris because she was a rock back there. I mean, the ability for the team to have so much confidence in a keeper like that, and she showed so well. Like you said, the goal that did get by her was an amazing feat in itself. But Harris has been really well, really good the first two games, and hopefully she can keep that type of form going.
All right, Andrew.
I am going to diverge a little bit. I'm actually going with Sanderson. I thought we talked about a pedestrian first half. It was. Mm-hmm. She came in. The complete dynamic of the entire team changed. We looked aggressive. We looked like we could actually play. We looked like we were a team that had come to compete this first year. She did that in the Thorns game too. So she's going to be my player for that game.
All right, and I'm going to make it 3-for-3 with different people. on the Pride side by going with Jasmine Spencer. I think that, you know, we've had some folks on Twitter and in our comments say that they don't like the way she plays. She has a heavy touch. She can't pass this and that. I think that, yeah, she sometimes does have trouble with that final ball, like number 18 on the men's side. But I also think she affected the game both times in a very positive way, in a way that no one else really seemed to be able to do. And I think that if it weren't for Spencer being on the pitch, I think that, you know, both the Portland game and the Houston game could have wound up very lopsided the other way, because I think there were times when, you know, they couldn't do anything with her. She was getting roughed up a bit. She's very, very short. She's very small. She's only 5'1", and she took a lot of abuse, but she kept going. And Tom Sermani showed that he wasn't from the U.S. when he called her the Duracell Bunny instead of the Energizer Bunny, but after the match. But yeah, she's, you know, she just keeps going, and it doesn't matter how much you rough her up or how, you know, you try to play physical with her, she just continues to get forward and make runs and draw fouls and be a dangerous presence. And I think that, you know, her play into the left of Morgan really has helped that offense, you know, immensely over the first two games. So we'll see how she develops, because she's just a pick from the expansion draft. She's something that another team didn't want. They left her unprotected, and you know, now she's with the Pride. So she's doing very well. And Steph Catley also, I spoke with her after the match, and she spoke very glowingly of Jasmine Spencer's efforts for the first two games. So an enjoyable game, and of course the Pride will be in action on Sunday, going to Chicago to play the Red Stars. We'll be back. They will be back home on May 8th to play the Seattle Reign at 5:00. So if you didn't get to go to opening day, you know, go on May 8th. It's a Sunday. It's a Sunday afternoon, so even though it's a school night, you know, you can take the whole family. You'll be home in plenty of time to get it ready, get the kids to bed at a decent hour. So I think we've wrapped up all we need to wrap up. So it's time to look ahead. And of course, Orlando City plays the New England Revolution on Saturday night up at Gillette Stadium. And we're going to bring in a guest here to talk about that a little bit right after this. Okay, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, we are proud and pleased to welcome Jake Cadenese from the Bent Musket blog. They are SB Nation's New England Revolution blog. Jake, how you doing?
Boo, podcast. Come on, guys. You knew that was coming.
We are punny guys,
yes,
here.
Oh, my God. This network and their puns will be the death of me. If not MLS referees getting to me first.
Yes, well, you know, it's always something here. Jake, first of all, why don't you tell folks on the, you know, out in the podcast land where they can find you on Twitter and online, where they can read your stuff?
Well, sure. You have, obviously, sbnation.com/MLS/soccer. You should always be going there anyway. The bentmusket.com for all the Revolution things. And me personally, at jcatanese43, C-A-T-A-N-E-S-E is the last name. And yeah, always, you know, check out, you know, if you're, you know, a regular follower of the mainland or the podcast, you know, go browse through the, you know, the opposition hashtag. For us, it's hashtag any revs, you know, just to sort of, you know, get a feel of, you know, what the, you know, talk is about before the games and things like that. And, you know, feel free to, you know, ask questions. A lot of us are pretty receptive to answering things.
All right. N.E. Rev. So I'm, you know, when I was a kid, I had this, I'm kind of an older guy. So like when I was a kid, it was a long time ago. I had this toy. It was an Evel Knievel on his motorcycle. And you just like set him in a little thing and you wound it up and let it go. And I'm going to do that right now by asking you what the hell happened 2 weeks ago when New England and Orlando played. And the referee lost his damn mind at the end of the game. Like from your perspective.
From my perspective, there the less egregious of the mistakes is the Molino handball, because that happened perhaps away from the referee, Baldomero Toledo, and his assistant. But, you know, while it was still a blatant handball, I'm not talking Thierry Henry versus Ireland blatant, because that was bad. But would I put it in the same category as, hey, remember that? Yeah, Kevin Molino sort of did that, but it was far less obvious. It hit his hand. It wasn't like it was an egregious thing. It hit his hand. It dropped to his foot. He gained an advantage, and he slotted a ball home. Everyone saw it, at least from New England, but through the trees in the forest, Baldomero Toledo and his assistants couldn't see it. To me, that sometimes is a reasonable thing. If it weren't for the fact that the year pro is having really affecting, like, this isn't the first time this has happened. It's not the first time it's happened to England. It wasn't the last time it would happen to Orlando. As we saw 2 minutes later, I got to tell you right now, I know many years ago when I was a youth referee, there was always the argument of, is your shoulder a part of your arm? And I had many youth coaches, because I wasn't very good at heading the ball, I would bounce things off my shoulder all the time. And they would always say, that's a handball. I'm like, how am I supposed to detach my shoulder from the position that it's in and not have the ball play off? I didn't understand it. I didn't let it bother me. But Servando Carrasco to be called for a handball in that situation was a mistake. It's not a handball. His arms are clearly not only behind him, but at his side. Perhaps the fact that maybe he dipped the shoulder into the ball, which would still, in my opinion, be fine, maybe is what sold it to Baldomero Toledo as it being a foul. As far as it being a penalty kick, that is actually where the refereeing and the crew and the conversation to actually get it right, because even though we disagree with the original call, we can't now compound the error and say, well, it didn't happen outside the box when it actually did. So we actually have to go and point to the spot and give Lee Wynn a chance to tie the game. And yeah, it wasn't good. That game should have ended 1-1. It should have been zero controversy. And instead, everyone went home unhappy, and the Orlando groundskeepers had some things to clean up after the game.
Yeah, that was a little bit of an issue on our side. But, I mean, just like you said, we could harp on the pro referees for a long time. Yes. So far this season. Everyone's had issues. But let's talk a little bit more about the match. You know, New England actually played really well here, even though we got off on that early foot with the PK slotted home by Kaká. And now we have a quick turnaround with the rematch up there in New England. How do you see the match going, and what do you see as some of the key matchups?
You know, it's very much the same. New England actually is right now at halftime as we record this against Portland, 0-0. And I know somewhere on your site, I don't remember who wrote it, but someone was talking about limiting the service from Chris Tierney. Now, Chris Tierney, our vaunted left back, is not playing at the moment. He has an injury. And in his place, Donnie Smith, guy who's had all of zero starts at left back up until today, but has basically been the sort of successor at the position, except Chris Tierney never misses games, he's actually playing fairly well. He drew a foul, gave a yellow card to, I think it was, no, I'd have to go and find it now. Zarek Valentin actually just picked up a yellow card in stoppage time, and that was because Donnie Smith stole the ball off of him. So I think from a concept standpoint, you're right about needing the Revolution to eliminate the service, because if you're going to clog the middle and deny Lee Wynn chances, you're going to have to make sure that what the Revolution are going to do next is get the ball out wide and then cross it back in. You have to make sure that the defense that you have compact in the box is prepared for it and ready to deal with not just the first ball, but the second ball that might come afterwards. And I think Orlando did a fairly good job of that in the first game up until really, you know, the goal that Teal Bunbury scored that basically fell right to him and he almost flew over the crossbar. It was a very, I thought, very even game, and I think you're going to see that again this weekend.
Well, and you've mentioned the game that they're currently playing. It looks like Charlie Davies has actually come off injured, yes. And you have, you know, this is, Saturday's game will be your third game in 8 days. How do you think that's going to stretch the squad this early in the season?
Well, the Revolution already have problems scoring goals, and whether or not it's a striker problem or a formation problem, we can debate in New England. The bigger issue right now is just the Revolution aren't scoring. It doesn't matter who's up front, doesn't matter who's in the wing. New England is just not scoring goals. And what you'll probably see is some combination of either Juan Aguidelo or Teal Bunbury up front. Femi Hollander-Jansen has been a third-round rookie who has shown some interesting promise off the bench in very limited minutes and appearances this year. And, I think it's just a matter for the Revolution really of just breaking out of the funk that they're in. And whether or not it happens, today or maybe this weekend against Orlando, New England needs a game where they just pace somebody like 4-0. And they just get the confidence back because they're still playing like the Revolution. They're still pinging little passes around in the final third. They're still opening up defenses. Just they're doing everything but just putting the ball into the back of the net. And I think for Orlando as a team who I think can play not so much to the Rev's strength, but to play a very good compact game and can hit out on the counter. New England is not a team that you really thought of going into the year as a team that you want them to have a lot of the ball, because really what you're more scared about is probably New England on the counter. Sitting back and playing defense and forcing the Revolution to beat you has actually been a very effective strategy at times for a lot of teams, and it's one of the reasons why New England's having so many problems scoring early on in the year. So I expect Orlando to sort of play the same thing. It's an interesting matchup, almost a mirror matchup as far as the formations go. Orlando doesn't mind sitting back and hitting back on the counter, and New England certainly doesn't mind having the ball, but they'd like opportunities to break out and get numbers forward with advantage.
Yeah, Jake, you mentioned the Tierney thing on our site. We did talk about, I think Brent had turned that in, then discovered there was an injury, and we did put in a line about that. So
that's fine.
We kind of covered for it. But speaking of fullbacks, I want to get your thoughts on how you thought Kevin Alston played in the match 2 weeks ago, and also how would you have felt had he put that late chance in the net?
Well, up until that chance, I think someone I'm sure on the Revolution hashtag probably went, yeah, that's a Kevin Alston shot. But Alston, for those that aren't aware, battled through leukemia several seasons ago and came back to be the league's comeback player of the year, which was a very special thing for us in Boston. And Alston's a guy that, you want to have him on your team. Whether or not he's actually playing a lot of minutes, he's certainly a player who can step in whenever you want. Can play either fullback position, doesn't mind getting forward, pretty good service into the box. And really the only problem that he ever had in New England was just he has hamstring problems. He was always battling through injuries, it seemed, and with the leukemia battle, it was just another thing that just piled on to a great player and more importantly, I think a great presence in the locker room. And it certainly would have been sad, but it's also, New England, went out and, picked up Javon Watson effectively to replace him at right back, and also have rookie Jordan McCrary selected in the first round of the MLS draft. So New England seems fairly deep at fullback now. Darius Barnes, another player who was injured for a lot of last year and missed some time, hasn't played yet this year, but certainly is an option if New England needs him. So while we personally miss Kevin, the Revolution have done fairly well to replace him on the roster, and we think Orlando's gotten a pretty good player, and we're really happy he flew that one over the bar, because that would have sucked.
Jake, you guys have had, what is this, 4 games in 2 weeks now? I mean, you've had to travel to a couple of those. The good thing is you're at home against Portland now, and then you're going to be at home against Orlando, but I mean, that's a lot of play within a couple weeks at the beginning of the season. Do you see any changes to the lineup that maybe Orlando can exploit, or are they going to really roll out that same lineup they've been playing with, and especially those top four up top?
Yeah, you know, the top four might change a little bit as far as, you know, you really have, you know, a certain number of players like, you know, Davies, Bunbury, Rowe, Fagundes. Lee Wynn's probably always going to play, but there's always any combination of other three guys who could be around him at striker and at wing. Scott Caldwell did not start against Portland right now, and he's still not in the game. So it's more than likely you'll see Scott Caldwell and either a combination of Gershon Kofi or Daigo Kobayashi, who are the two starting holding midfielders right now, will probably be in some combination in the two holding spots. It'll be very interesting to see if the entire back line can stay together. Donnie Smith is not a player who gets a lot of minutes. It's his first appearance of the season. Actually, his first appearance in maybe 2 years. So you might see a combination of London Woodbury at right back and a Javon Watson at left back. Maybe Chris Tierney's back for that game. But it certainly seems like there could be some changes, but it's probably nothing that's going to affect the Revolution game plan and certainly not the Revolution lineup. One of the big knocks on Jay Heaps the last year or so has been his inability to get out of the standard 4-2-3-1 and late in games. You're really not changing anything. Sometimes they go three to the back if there's a red card or something like that, but it's really been the staple of the Revolution has been to use that formation and really just pass the ball around a lot in the final third and hit back on the counter. So none of that's going to change in the immediate future, even though the Revolution are, you know, rotating the squad a little bit and, you know, changing out maybe one or two players, but nothing certainly that you guys should be, you know, completely blindsided by.
Well, and I guess it brings a potential interesting point is, you know, you are in the middle of a squad rotation. Who we have just seen you guys a couple of weeks ago, but who do you think we should be watching out for as you rotate, get some fresh bodies on the field and actually stay fresh to remain competitive?
You know, I think there's no one on the field that's like a completely unknown. It would be very interesting to me, though, if we did get to see either a start or a very long shift off the bench from a Femi Hollinger-Jansen, the rookie striker who hasn't seen a ton of minutes on the field, but I think has certainly deserved it. When Charlie Davies came off, I was actually surprised that he wasn't the one summoned into the game. Juan Aguidelo's now on the field, is coming back from an injury himself. Teal Bunbury has spent a couple games up top, and he's perhaps not the best guy you want as your lone forward in New England. It's never been something that's worked out very well, even though he's played well and done a lot of little things right, even against Orlando 2 weeks ago. I know he did score the goal. But I think it's always been sort of a team aspect. Like, even with Lee Wynn's 2014 MVP season, there's still – you know, it's more the team around him. It's a collective effort. You know, it's any number of one or two players can combine to beat you at any given time. And that includes the fullbacks. That includes even, you know, someone like Andrew Farrell making a run up into the midfield from the center back position. But I think it would be interesting to see maybe one of the unknown holding midfielders like a Gershon Kofi or a Daigo Kobayashi really get involved and creating a goal or two. Daigo Kobayashi had a winner, or an equalizer, I should say, in Houston in stoppage time, which was a very, very nice game for the Revolution as far as offense goes. But they haven't been able to put, you know, three goals into the net. I don't think they've even put two goals into the net aside from the Orlando game this season. So, you know, like I said, you're sort of more waiting for the Revolution as a team to break out rather than one player to break out at this point.
Jake, you know, before we let you go, we can't let you get out of here without giving your key matchup to the game on Saturday night and also your score prediction. But even before we get to that, just a quick – if you could just comment real quick about your thoughts on Jermaine Jones and him leaving the Revolution and now what he's doing in Colorado.
Well, that was always a very divisive topic. I was in the camp that firmly wanted Jermaine Jones to come back at – whatever cost the Revolution would obviously think that he was worth, and whatever it worked out to be, Revolution didn't think that it was necessary. Maybe that was from a contract standpoint. Maybe it was from a salary standpoint. I'm not 100% sure. No one really knows when it comes to sometimes the Revolution and contract mm-hmm. negotiations. Certainly, I think that Jones is a player that could still help this team. But like, you know, Kevin Alston going to Orlando, New England went out and got Gershon Kofi. They got players that they thought could help them this year, and you know, they moved on. And I think collectively as a team, the Revolution haven't played, you know, terribly in his absence. They're certainly not scoring goals, but they aren't necessarily playing, you know, badly. You know, you can argue, well, they look kind of bad against DC last week, but that was really just the last, you know, few minutes. You know, you, very much like the Orlando game, you give up an early penalty, you're behind the eight ball, and it sort of goes awry at the end. But, you know, I'm happy for Jermaine. You know, I'm still a U.S. national team fan. You want to see him performing well at the club level because it probably means he'll play well at the international level. I'm not really sure I would use him as a central attacking midfielder. like Colorado is using him as, but you know what? I'm not really going to complain if that's something that he is doing and he's being productive at it. That more power to him. I'm certainly going to miss him on the field. You know, but you know, Revolution still have a very good core of players that are still, you know, I don't think they're playing as badly as a 1-2-5 or whatever the record is that they're playing right now. And I don't think Jermaine Jones entirely, even with the 6-game suspension, changes that.
All right, and your key matchups and a score prediction for Saturday.
You know, I'm going to go back. I'm going to say Julio Baptista. Is that I get that right? Baptista?
Yeah, Baptista.
Baptista,
yeah.
That's it. I keep thinking the wrestler, but it's not exactly it. I'm going to go. I liked him from an Orlando standpoint, not because he drew the early penalty, but just that's a very – it's a very New England type player that I think a lot of players have thought, you know, a lot of fans have thought we need that type of player. Almost a true number nine target striker. You know, the trio of, you know, Davies, Bunbury, and Aguadillo have been effective and have some wonderful moments for New England. But there's just that true target, big 6'3", 6'4", guy who's just a gigantic problem to deal with no matter what. And you saw it against New England. He didn't get a lot of the ball, but when he did, it was very, very effective. So I think if he can recreate any part of that magic early on in the game, he did draw a penalty. He's going to have to deal with Jose Gonsalves more than likely as center back instead of Andrew Farrell and Javon Watson, who was deputized from fullback to center back for that game. But, you know, I'm really excited to sort of see that because Jose Gonsalves is the master of shielding players off the ball. And he sometimes does this for the entire length of the 18, I think, just because he can. And you guys should enjoy the art and mastery that he does when he is boxing someone off the ball, because I always get a kick out of it. And I think it'll be a fun matchup to sort of watch that particular little bit of soccering skill between Baptista and Calvez in the box this weekend.
And what do you think the score will end up being?
God, the Revolution, if they don't beat Portland today, which I can't expect them to do midweek, if this game ends 0-0, I will be completely content with that. They need to beat Orlando this weekend. There's just no other. There's no doubt about. They need a win. They need 3 points. So I have to predict 3 points, and I'm going to have to do it in emphatic fashion. I'm going to go 3-0. A bit of a pasting, but it'll be a very hard-fought 3-0. It won't be easy. Orlando will make our lives miserable for about 75 minutes before we break open and maybe score one or two late to unflatter the score line a little bit.
Wow, so you're going with the exact same scores from last year, 2-2 and 3-0.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Somehow the results, it's one of those things where we play these weird games in Orlando that end up as ties, and then you guys show up on the turf in the Northeast, and then bad things just happen. So, yeah, I did notice that. It wasn't intentional that I did that, but no, that is something that I noticed. I was like, oh, yeah, that was that weird 2-2 game where the New England somehow blew a 2-0 lead last year. I remember that.
Well, like in that game, we don't know that Kaká will play, and we expect to have Breck Shea, but you never know. Weird things seem to happen.
Yeah, did he get suspended this week?
No. You know, I'm just saying because bad things seem to happen to us, especially injury-wise. Soft tissue injuries seem to be a recurring problem the last couple of games before the game. We found out somebody was hurt, like Kaká, we found out the night before.
Higuita.
And the week before, Christian Higuita had a groin injury that didn't crop up till he was on the road trip.
Well, and soft tissue issues, injuries, when you combine them with the Gillette Stadium turf, I bet don't really do all that well.
No, so I'm that's why I don't think Kaká will play, because unless he's 100%, you don't risk him on that surface.
I certainly wouldn't. I mean, maybe if you were thinking a late shift off the bench, if you're looking for an equalizer, but no, I would, you know, like I said, this is a game New England perhaps needs far more than Orlando. So, you know, if Orlando, not to say that Orlando is going to give the game away, but it's certainly a game where if they don't win it or they go out and they get a 1-1 type draw, they're certainly not going to be unhappy with a result like that, particularly in New England, which has been a place that not a lot of people get points from in recent history, not so much this season, but during the cup run and during recent seasons with Jay Heaps.
All right, Jake Cadenese from the Bent Musket, thanks so much for being our guest here on the Mainland Podcast. We have no parting gifts, as always.
And
we wish you, after this week, we wish you luck the rest of the season.
And I do as well, despite the fact that Kyle Lahren is Canadian. He did attend the University of Connecticut, and we still love him. May he not score a goal in New England ever again.
Well, you know, he enjoys the Northeast, as we've seen, so we'll see what happens on Saturday night. Jake, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, well, that just about does it, guys. It was good to have Jake Cadenese of the Bent Musket on the program. And, you know, he's a guy who knows his soccer, and he's very passionate, as you could probably tell. That came through, I think, pretty well, and also knowledgeable. I think that came through as well. And, you know, who says all the people from Boston are obnoxious?
Doesn't everyone?
Yeah, you're right. Everyone does. Even other people from Boston, yeah. I think, say that. But you know what? It's gonna be a good match. I mean, it was a very hotly contested first meeting. I don't expect, you know, the second game to be a blowout like it was last year. There were a lot of guys missing last year from the international break. When we went to Gillette Stadium last year, and I don't expect that it to be quite so lopsided this time. But again, it is a tough place to play, and New England will be a desperate team on Saturday night. And I don't like playing desperate teams because, you know, these teams have been around in the league a few years, and you know, a lot of the guys on Orlando are still fairly new to the league. So, you know, it can cause problems, especially for young players. But before we get to our New England key matchups and our score predictions, why don't we get to our Ask the Mainland segment? We've got a couple of questions here, and we'll start with Daniel, and we're going to field a question here from Sam Coffey, who asks, thoughts on the Orlando Pride's dominant performance on Sunday and future attendance for Pride games. So what did you think about the dominating performance, and what do you think we'll see sort of from an average attendance moving forward?
Well, I mean, it's exciting to see the Pride be able to you know, put goals, put the ball back in the back of the net, and play well at home. You know, they played well on the road against Portland in the opening match, and we see some some young stars rising up, and Jasmine Spencer that we talked to earlier, and Steph Catley. Wow, she is so good. I mean, really, really good. Leon Sanderson as well. Alex Morgan, of course. Ashton Harris on goal. This team is going to be exciting. It's unfortunate that it's a short season with NWSL, but as it keeps growing, hopefully we get more games as well. But look for Orlando to fight for a playoff spot, and then hopefully drive on from there. And with the attendance as well, we sat around 24,000 for the opening game. I think a lot of people left happy. I don't know what kind of viewership there was on YouTube. Unfortunately, they don't have a channel that's covering them yet, and neither does NWSL. But look for around 15,000 to 16,000. I think that's the number Alex Morgan was putting out there, right? So. Look for the team trying to get that those type of numbers in the stadium and draw big crowds.
All right, Andrew, your thoughts on that?
I guess first of all, in the dominant performance, I wouldn't have called it a dominant performance. Yes, we won 3-1, but Houston did look dangerous. They didn't have Carly Lloyd. Both sides, it could have really swung any way in the first 45 if somebody had managed to break through. I think we just had. We eventually all meshed together. I think the crowd managed to get more of the energizing. I'm not taking anything away from their performance. I just wouldn't describe it as dominant. In terms of attendance, I'm going a lot further down than Daniel. I am going to say that I think our average after the first couple of games, we'll go down to around 8,500 to 9,500. I just think you're going to get into the heat of summer. We're going to have a break for the Olympics. There's going to be some fallout from people who are going to get soccer tired. We'll have had like 40 total games by August or something across all three clubs. I expect numbers to drop off and into that kind of ballpark.
All right. Well, I will say that it's, I think it's fair to say that maybe it wasn't a dominating performance in terms of the way that the two teams competed. But obviously the final score looked good and was very flattering, and you know, and kudos to the Pride for finding a way to get the ball in the net, and kudos to Orlando City or Orlando Pride's defense and goalkeeper for preventing goals. And I think that you know, it's not quite there yet. This team's still coming together, still hasn't gelled. I mean, you saw some issues. You know, Laura Alloway is one of the world's better center backs, and she coughed up two balls that. That ended up in dangerous situations. And I think that there's still some gelling to do there. And I think that this team will get better and better. And I agree with Daniel in that the team should compete for a playoff spot. I don't know that they'll make the playoffs. They might finish fifth or sixth, but I think that it's certainly at least a mid-table team in year one. And once they learn to play together and you know, get some more time together, I think certainly it's a team that should challenge for championships down the road, the way that they are built. So if they continue to bring in these types of players, I think they should be much better down the road. I think the attendance wise, I think by the end of the season, based on the good opening weekend number, I think they'll probably finish with an average attendance in the neighborhood of 10,000, 11,000 because of this 23 plus that we had. Which over the course of 10 home matches, that's pretty good. I think I don't think it'll be an NWSL record average attendance, but I think it'll be a very good one, and it'll be among the best in the league. So thanks, Sam, for your question. Our last question this week comes from Josh Green, who actually Josh is going to do some graphics work for us. So Josh, thanks for writing in. He wants to know, we'll start with Andrew this time. How can we improve our defense and avoid letting missed calls get to us?
How can we improve our defense? I mean, we need to – well, that's a structured question. I mean, we need to get rid of some dead weight. Obviously, we need to ship out Holland so that we can free up some cap space. I'm not too sure – is it – I think you've got to improve everybody else first. You know, that we really saw a capitulation from the defense ultimately because they were just getting no protection from everybody playing in front of them. Usually yeah. They have that in Higuita and Seren, but if they give up, they've basically got 90 minutes of just being barraged. And I think you may also just have to get people who play that position. You know, Ramos is very young, has very little experience other than what he's given us in terms of games. Breck Shea, we're trying to convert him into a left back, and I think really the Red Bulls game kind of showed you his limitations in defense. And then I really think we're actually got the best partnership that we could right now, and we just have to be able to get rid, unfortunately, of the people sitting warming the bench right now that are taking up a lot more money than Reading and Hines combined in terms of just Collins' salary alone.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel, why don't you take the second part of that question? How can the team avoid letting missed calls get to them?
I don't know how the team can avoid that whenever it happens so often. If it wasn't a regular occurrence, then I don't think it would bother many people if it happened every now and again. But as a professional, they have to make sure that they're always looking ahead and always to make a mark on the match. And if a missed call happens, right, you have to move forward. You can't worry about what just happened. Just like a goalkeeper, if he lets in a goal, he can't worry about the last goal. He has to be ready for the next save. So that's how the team needs to operate moving forward. And speaking to the point of how can we get better as well as possession, we have to hold the ball. This team last year was very good at possessing the ball and putting passes and stringing those together and really pinning teams in their half. And we haven't seen that this year. And that's how you can help your defense, is by possessing the ball. Any team that can possess the ball helps their defense, and Orlando needs to figure out how to do that again.
Yeah, I think that if you're going to play Tommy Redding, my answer on the defensive question, if you're going to play Tommy Redding, you're going to have to live with his mistakes. So, you know, if your idea is he's going to be the future, we're going to play him, you have to live with those mistakes, and they're going to happen. And it's just like, you know, when you're, if you're a football fan and you have a rookie quarterback playing, you know he's going to make mistakes. You have to live with it and go, darn it, and just move on. The only other thing you can really do is start playing David Mateos, because he was supposed to be the starter at the beginning of the year and he got hurt. So, you know, theoretically, there's a reason he was supposed to be the starter. He's supposedly the best option. So, you know, maybe you bring in Mateos and let him and Hines, you know, build that partnership, you know, of two guys that have been around a little while. I agree with Andrew that you cannot have that much salary in center backs sitting on the bench. You can't have Colin and Mateos, who are both pricey center backs, sitting on the bench. If they're going to be there, you're going to have to ship them out and bring in somebody that can do that, you know, can be the backups for cheaper. There's just no two ways about it. You can't spend that much money on your bench and just sit there and hope you never have to use them. I mean, because if they're your backups, that's what you're saying. That's like, okay, break in case of emergency. That's my thought. As for the other thing, I think that you see a fairly positive response on Twitter from the players when these bad calls happen, because most of them happen at the end of the games. So, you know, they'll tweet things out like, you know, you can only control what you can control and not worry about the rest. We'll get them next time. You know, so they're saying the right things. In terms of the New York game, that one did happen in the middle of the game. And I don't know that it really let that non-call get in their heads. It's possible that Laren did. But, I mean, everybody else was in full helter-skelter defense mode, you know, throughout the game. So, I mean, I don't think anything changed on that end. It's just New York finally finished a play. They were bound to do it sooner or later. I mean, Bendik can't be Superman forever. So, you know, those are just my thoughts. So, Josh, thanks so much for your question. Thanks, everybody. If you want to ask us anything you want to know, it doesn't even have to be soccer related. Just use the hashtag AskTMLPC, the Mainland Podcast. AskTMLPC on Twitter or email us. And put Ask the Mainland in your email subject line. And you can email us at themainland@gmail.com. Guys, final thoughts here. We're going to get to our key matchups and score predictions. Daniel, we'll start with you. Orlando City at New England.
Well, I think the key matchups here have got to be our defense against that attacking four, whatever it's going to be from New England. New England, Diego Fagundes, Kellen Rowe, I think Charlie Davies went out injured tonight, but T.L. Bunbury, if Chris Tierney's back, Lee Wynn, our defense is going to have to stay compact. They're going to have to track those wide runners that like to swing the ball in the box, and Breck Shea's going to have to be on his game, and whoever's manning the other side, be it Ramos or Kevin Olsen, can't lose track of their men. It's going to be interesting to see playing up there in New England. I know New England's played a lot of matches. They're coming off a short week here. They're playing tonight right against Portland, I think, ending in 1-1. That's going to be – there's going to be key matchups all across the back with those four that New England have. But I'm going to call a win with Orlando for 2-1. And the reason being, because I think the short time frame, that turnaround from New England playing Portland tonight, hopefully that 1-1 draw is going to tire some of those players out. Charlie Davies getting injured. I know that Tierney is questionable to play, so that lineup might not be as cohesive as they'd want. And I'm saying Kevin Molino's going to get a goal, and then Venter's going to get back in the books as well. I think he's going to get his third of the season.
All right. Well, thanks, Daniel. And Andrew, what do you think is going to happen, and what's your key matchup?
I'm going to switch it around and really say it's Laren against their center backs. They've undergone some defensive shuffling right now if Tierney doesn't play. They've also put Woodbury rested midweek, so he's going to be fresh and ready to go. I think it's going to be about Laren trying to get the opportunities that may be few and far between into the back of the net. And that's the only way we've seen it. He hasn't been getting the supply that he needs. He has to be able to take those chances that come his way. So I'm going Laren against the defense. I am not calling it a win. I am going to go for a 1-1 draw. I think this team likes draws. I think they'd be very happy with a point away from home. And I think we're going to snatch one. I do not think it will be Laren. I think it will come somewhere from the midfield. I like Vinter. I potentially to get back in the books too. He just seems like he really wants to keep going, just like the Energizer Bunny, and grab another one, hopefully, in that game.
All right. Well, I'm also going to say 1-1, and I'll give you my key matchup in a moment. But I think that what kills more offense for me is I just don't think Kaká is going to be in the lineup. I don't think that you risk him on the Gillette, you know, stadium turf if he's not 100%, and I don't know that he will be. So I'm going to say that that the offense suffers a little bit, and I think it's 1-1. And I think that my key matchup is whoever slots in for Kaká against the, you know, central midfielders for New England. That's my key matchup. If it's Batista again, you know, he's going to have to do more than he did at New York. He just wasn't good enough in my book. If they decide to go with a different look and a 4-3-2-1, then, you know, that basically puts it probably on Vinter and Molino to get that job done in Kaká's absence. So this is all predicated on me just assuming that Kaká will not be available for one more game. And we don't know that at this point, this early in the week as we're recording this. But I'm assuming he's not going to be in. And so, you know, my thought is the main attacking midfield against the central midfield of New England is the key matchup in a 1-1 final. And I'm going to say that the scoring play is Kyle Larin, and it's going to be on a header from across, potentially from Breck Shea. So there you go. That's my that's our bold predictions. And guys, before we get out of here, I do want to ask you this. What are the Pride going to do against the Red Stars and Kristen Press on Sunday?
I think they will do really well. I think that they were really – they looked like a unit, even though it was only their second competitive game. I think they can go in there and the Red Stars have Kristen Press, but they don't necessarily have great strength and everywhere else around the park. So I think it'll be a good solid 2-0 win for them.
Yeah, okay. I'm actually going to go with a 1-0 win with Morgan putting it, slotting that goal home. The reason being, Orlando's look like they have international talent all around the field. Chicago doesn't necessarily have that, even though they're at home and Kristen Press is as good as she is. I don't see them hanging with Orlando, and I think Orlando's just going to dominate possession and really, really not necessarily run away with it and score, but run away with it in possession.
Okay. I am going to say 1-1 draw, the Pride and the Red Stars. I think it's going to be tough to get more than one past the listener. It's going to be a matchup of U.S. Women's National Team goalkeepers, so we'll see what happens. The Red Stars come into this game with a win and a loss, just like the Pride, so they're going to be battling for position, and it should be interesting to see what happens. So this game could turn on something weird too, like a penalty or something.
Yep.
So I'm gonna throw that out there. Am I hearing this right, guys? New England drew again.
Yes.
That they did, yeah.
So New England will be coming off a draw and probably getting another draw on Saturday. So anyway, that'll just about wrap up this edition, episode number 47 of the Mainland Podcast. I want to thank again Jake Cadenese from the Bent Musket, the New England Revolution blog at SB Nation, for coming on the show. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, at The Mainland, and you can catch us online at themainland.com, and also like our Facebook page, please, and go on to the iTunes and give us a nice rating and a good review. We'd really appreciate that. You can, of course, get your questions in, hashtag AskTMLPC. So on behalf of Daniel McGann and Andrew Harrison, I'm not even going to be around this weekend to watch the game because my kid's graduating and I'm going to be out of town, so that's... I'm going to have to rewatch on stinking MLS Live or something, but
it's not all bad.
I just hate watching games where I already know the outcome, especially if it doesn't go well, But anyway, on behalf of Daniel and Andrew, we'll see you next week to talk all about Orlando City and New England. Of course, the Pride at the Red Stars. We'll talk a little OCB as well. And I'm signing off as always saying, go City.